In today's gospel from Luke that we just heard, Jesus introduces us to a rich man who remains unnamed and a poor man named Lazarus. Jesus tells the story of their parallel lives, lives in which they are close to one another, yet their paths never cross in this life. In the parable, both men die, and then the story shifts, showing us an idea of what their lives might have been like after death. The rich man is in Hades. Lazarus is tucked in the heart of God beside Abraham. The rich man calls out, asking for Lazarus to go to work, asking for water to quench his thirst. Abraham speaks up. "Child, remember that during your lifetime you received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner evil things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in agony. Besides all this, between you and us a great chasm has been fixed." The rich man pleads again, asking Lazarus to go to his home to warn his family so that they can change their lives and not join him in Hades. Abraham's response is as clear as it is bleak. "Child, they were given Moses and the prophets. The truth you wish them to hear is already made known to them, as it was made known to you. There is nothing we can say to them that they've never heard. If they do not listen to Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced, even if someone rises from the dead." The rich man is described as being dressed in purple and fine linen, living in a home that is surrounded by gates. Lazarus lies just outside. We could quickly assume that it is the rich man's clothing or the rich man's gate that send him to Hades. But I think that would miss the point. The problem isn't simply that the rich man has money. The problem is that his money and his things have served as a shield to distance himself from the world that lives so very close to his own. The problem isn't that he lives within gates. The problem is that he does not open his gates in hospitality. He does not know what sits in suffering immediately outside of them. The problem isn't that he has purple robes and fine linen. The problem is that his purple robes and linen attempt to shield him from realizing that he and Lazarus share a common humanity. And the gospel tells us that the result of a life lived this way is what? Agony. And I believe that is not just after death, but also in life. The rich man might be privileged enough to have a gate around his home, and he might be rich enough to have purple garments and linen, but I don't think those are the forces trying to push him into Hades. It is instead a heart of fear and scarcity. The great chasm between his agony and dwelling in the heart of God can only be filled by generous love. The rich man is not generous. Not in his home, and it would seem not in his love. Even when he calls up from Hades, he asks Lazarus to get to work, to serve him. However, he is still referred to as child. There is still tenderness in the words of Abraham as he speaks to the rich man, telling him that he cannot be relieved from his agony. You see, this great chasm, this is enough to meditate on alone. But there is another layer that we are forced to reckon with, and that is the reality of regret. I hear in the rich man's words something I've felt in my soul. "I wish I had done things different. If only I had known." And what we are faced with in this gospel text is the same thing the rich man is faced with when he cries out from Hades. You were given Moses. You were given the prophets. You were invited to listen. And for us, we've been given Moses. We've been given the prophets. We even see every Easter a man who comes to us from the dead to call us to generous love. And so, if we are not convinced, it is not that we were not told. I don't get to say, "If only I had known," because I do know. And that's the great challenge of this passage, to act on what we know. And we know that we are called to generous love. The evils we face right now are not as ambiguous as I would like for them to be. They do not require the massive changes that I assume I am too weak to help with. I don't get to say, I wish I had known. I don't get to say, if only I had been told. Generous love is my calling, and I know it. I have been told. Yet still, I am quick to erect gates around my heart when it is moved to act. I am quick to wrap myself in purple robes if I fear that an act of love might embarrass me. I am quick to hide myself in the masses so that I can pretend to not have been called by God to love deeply and freely at all costs. I desperately do not want to live in regret, and yet when I neglect to love generously, I am regretful. I believe the fear of loving generously is a common fear, and that it is the same fear that adorns our bodies in purple robes to hide us. It is the same fear that builds gates around us so that we can continue to pretend that we are untouchable. And yet we know, we have been told, generous love is our calling. And I fear we will regret the moments when we avoid this calling. I once had a friend, but for a variety of reasons, we stopped talking, and not on good terms. Randomly, I would see him during Christmas breaks back home, because that's always who you bump into when you go back home. And years ago, when I was in Waco, I received a phone call from him that was shocking to me, and so I screened it. And I just couldn't put together why on earth he would be calling me. So I quickly texted one of our mutual friends, like, you will never believe who just tried to call me. And it was that same friend who called me a few days later to tell me that he had died suddenly. I received the phone call on Sunday at church between services, and the associate found me and went to go explain to Chuck why I would not be at the 11 o'clock service. And I learned in that moment, and I continue to learn each day since then, a little bit more about regret, deep, hellish regret. I listened to today's gospel, and it just sounds familiar. The bargaining, the wish for something, anything, a drop to assuage the pain. And I remember the moment that I realized that I could not live with a regret like that again. I would have to try to change. I would have to begin trying to love generously. Honestly, even with such a grave realization of how important it is, I'm still really bad at it because it terrifies me. Even with what will be a lifelong grieving to remind me, still I am able to quickly put up those gates and wrap myself in purple robes when I am given opportunities to say with my life, I love you. And what I'm finding is that the great regrets of my life are not what college I went to, where I got my master's, being a priest, taking this job, that job, the things that we might call the big decisions in our lives. No, the great regrets of my life are in small moments. Moments when the phone rings and I decide whether or not I pick up or screen it. Moments when pride stifles the love that wells up in my heart that I almost let fall out of my mouth. The great regrets of my life are moments when I've been forced to act out of my intuition, to realize later that my intuition thrives off of fear and self-preservation, when what I desperately want is for my reflex to be generous love. In the wake of the news that someone I loved had died, it is an understatement to tell you that I was a wreck. Regret, pain, fear, anger, memories, desire. It was a dangerous cocktail, especially alone in my apartment. I got a text that afternoon from my rector, Chuck, and his wife, Chris, telling me that I should come over the next day, that Monday. While I knew that Monday was their Sabbath, not to mention it was everyone's Labor Day holiday, and I knew we had all needed our rest after what had been a particularly strenuous week at the church. However, something stuck out to me that I needed to hear with that dangerous cocktail in my system. It was something that they said to me often. You don't ever have to be alone. I don't remember most of that Labor Day. But that morning, I woke up, and still in my house clothes, with no energy to shower or put on makeup, I showed up at their house. No one expected anything of me, which was good, because I had nothing to give. I remember sitting on the couch in the front room of their house by their bay window, in a wrinkled dress that I had slept in, with my hair oily and mascara clumped under my eyes. I don't think I talked as much as I usually do. They had just found a stray dog and had decided to adopt it that morning, so it was a very action-packed morning, and he sort of toddled in and out of the room while I sat there. And there were moments when I laughed because I almost forgot, and then there were moments when I would cry because I had remembered. And in all of it, they just let me be. When they were faced with an opportunity to put up rightful gates to protect their holiday and purple robes to distinguish their family's time from mine, they responded instead out of a reflex of generous love. I want to be a person who chooses to draw from the well of God's generous love. Because those moments when we act out of that love are the moments when we participate in the great love of God. By generously loving, we get to share the same love that breathed us into existence and the same love that will one day carry us to be tucked into the heart of God. If I draw from this well of generous love, I know I won't regret it. Amen.